commences for another day, another week. Yours truly, Bob McCowan, along with John Shannon.
Cheers, Robert.
We are going to spend some time today discussing, talking about, looking at the American teams in the National Hockey League. It is intriguing that we now can designate American teams versus Canadian teams because of the way the divisions have been set up, but that is the case. Before we do that, the Toronto Maple Leafs win twice against Winnipeg when it appeared they were scuffling. They had not had a victory in five games and didn't look good against the Vancouver team coming out of a COVID lockdown. And there was, you know, legitimate reason for wonderment, if not concern. Is this race in the Canadian division now over with the Maple Leafs up by what, 7-8 points?
8 points, yeah. Perhaps and probably. And the interesting thing is between the difference between the two games in Vancouver and the two games in Winnipeg to me was infinitesimal when you were a skater, but the goaltending was so much better, Bob. I mean, Jack Campbell went back into the net in Winnipeg and played really, really well. And it just goes to show how much different a team's performance can look when you have a goaltender that can stop every puck not flitter away opportunities.
Not to be perceived as negative, but I'm certain I will. I expected more offense from this Toronto Maple Leaf team on a fairly consistent basis. I think the talent level of this team is up front is better than anybody else's. Should Leaf fans, more accurately, be disappointed by how many goals they are scoring and how many goals are being scored more specifically outside of the first line?
Not enough. Although I would say that, there have been a couple of bumps in the road recently, but Tavares, Galchenyuk, and Nylander, when they've been together, and I've mentioned this before on the show, that I think John Tavares has played his best hockey as a Maple Leaf in this period of time. I think that there's just a quality level of chemistry between the three of them. And a lot of it has to do with the arrival of Alex Galchenyuk to the roster. So I'm not concerned about that line. Although, it's difficult to sit here and say we're disappointed with the amount of output from the offense for the Maple Leafs when Austin Matthews is leading the league in goals.
I didn't say that. I'm disappointed in the overall number of goals they're scoring, and specifically outside of the Matthews line.
Yeah, and it goes to in many ways why Nick Foligno was acquired, because they needed somebody outside of the top six to start to contribute. Now Foligno has to play on the top line right now because Zach Hyman's hurt. But when Hyman comes back, and he will come back before the end of the regular season, then that puts Foligno in that bottom six group. And I think they have to hope that the output improves from that perspective. Here's the other thing. Simmons, Spezza, Thornton. They've been great players. They bring some savvy to the team. But they're not the offensive players they once were. And I don't think anybody should have expected them to be. Now, Thornton scored a lovely goal on Saturday, but you don't expect them to be, offensive juggernauts for this hockey club anymore. You're right. They need more scoring. They need more balanced scoring, which is, one of the things that we thought Winnipeg had until they played the Maple Leafs on the weekend.
Before we go, evaluate the Winnipeg Jets. Many people think or thought they would be the best team in the Canadian division. And even as recently as a week ago, there were people that said, look out for Winnipeg because they might be the best. And you're among them.
Yeah, yeah.
Did your opinion change at all based on the two games that the Maple Leafs won in Winnipeg?
I tell you what, I was disappointed in Winnipeg on a couple of things. First of all, they had a bad start in the first game, and then they had some mental lapses in the second period. And really, you know, their big guns didn't contribute like the Maple Leaf big guns did. They didn't. Mark Scheifele got benched on Saturday night. Connor Hellebuyck, the goalie, got pulled on the Thursday game. This team with it looks beautiful on paper. It looks like a magnificent group of talented hockey players on paper. They've got to find a way to get over the hump. And that's Paul Maurice's biggest challenge, how to get these guys over that hump. And I'm not sure they can.
Yeah.
You know, they're going to have to, you know, and that's why they went and got Dubois, Bob, because he's been able to deliver the goods in playoff games the last couple of years, once against Tampa and once against Toronto. So maybe we're just waiting for the playoffs.
Well, speaking of the playoffs, they're not that far away now. And we're going to see a couple of rounds within the existing divisions, which is what we've seen all year. And then we're going to start to see the crossover. We won't see it until essentially still conference finals, but
no, they're not
more the accurately
just the semifinal.
Stanley Cup semifinal.
Right.
And who's the best of the rest? Who's the best of a bunch of American teams? We'll address that with our guests when the program continues after these messages. Bob McCown, John Shannon with you on the program today. We are just a few weeks away from the playoffs in the National Hockey League. And here in Canada, we are, I guess, focused on the Canadian division and probably have spent too little time looking at the other three divisions, all of which have American-based teams on them. So we thought we'd take an opportunity to kind of get you set for what to expect when the playoffs do begin. Arthur Staple covers the National Hockey League for The Athletic. Adrian Dater is with the Colorado Hockey News. He joins us from Las Vegas. Adrian,
yep.
Yes?
Las Vegas, yep.
We'll start with you because...
Because Bob Colorado... loves Vegas. No, because Bob loves Vegas. That's why we're starting with you, Adrian.
Well, I'm a former Las Vegan. I lived there for a number of years. That's part of the reason. But these are two very good hockey teams and among the best teams in the National Hockey League, I think all four of us would concede. Based on what you've seen, which of these two do you think is the better team?
Yeah, boy, good question. I'm a huge Barry Trotz guy, so anytime I say anything that would say I'm superseding Barry Trotz or I'm better than Barry Trotz, I'd be very hesitant to say. I think the Avalanche have a little more high-end talent. I think most people would probably agree with that. They have a lot of depth. The one thing they haven't done is prove it, that they can win. Deep into the playoffs yet. You know, the Islanders made it to the Eastern Finals last year, and Barry Trotz won a cup before that. So maybe, you know, that'd be a hell of a series, Avs Islanders. You know, the Avalanche still have to prove to me and others that they can actually are for real and not just, you know, everybody's sort of falling in love with their talent all the time. You know, the fact is they're in second place right now in their division, only 1 point ahead of the Minnesota Wild. You know, they do have two games in hand on the Wild, but this is not the, you know, for such a juggernaut and the best in the league label that they get, they're not even number one in their division right now. So for me, you know, I'm the old cynic probably covering the team too long, but you know, they still got things to prove.
The Golden Knights, though, Adrian, they've been pretty consistent all season long, where the Avalanche, who got off to a sputtering start, the Avalanche are going to have a tough time even just getting out of this division.
Yeah. I mean, everybody says, you know, well, the Avalanche, you just, you know, they've got, you know, they're the best in this conference. Nobody checked with Vegas on that yet. And they're right. They've been consistent for 4 years now, fourth straight year in the league, four playoff appearances. They're big, they're tough. They're bigger than the Avalanche. They hit harder than the Avalanche. You know, the Avalanche showed in the playoffs last year that they've had troubles with physical teams sometimes. Dallas pushed them around a little bit too much. Granted, the Avalanche did get a lot of injuries at the wrong time. Yet, you know, maybe they were hit too hard, and that's what caused some of the injuries too. You know, it's easy for me to say, but, it's going to – look, the Avalanche are a hell of a hockey team, though. They are fun to watch when they get it going. They were hurt by the COVID pause. I do believe they still technically control their own destiny. If they win out, they would win the division. So let's not get too down on them. They lost the other day, but they're missing their number one goal scorer right now. Mikko Rantanen to COVID. Number one goaltender still out. Brubauer, although he's joined the team again. And a very important utility guy, Jonas Donskoy, is still out too with COVID. So let's see this team get back healthy and see what they can do. It's going to be probably a very, very fun playoff matchup if those two teams meet.
Arthur, Adrian talked about, not wanting to cross Barry Trotz, but the division that the Islanders are in presents another challenge because there's these old foes, Pittsburgh and Boston, just came to hang around and are inching closer to what the Islanders and the Capitals are doing. How do you measure that Eastern division?
I think you just kind of throw all four of them into a hat. It doesn't seem to really matter where they finish or who's going to be first or who's going to be fourth. It's really about who matches up best with others. And, the Islanders took the first five off the Bruins this regular season, but I think the last two times they played them up in Boston where they scored one goal in two games looked a little bit more like the way the Islanders have played the Bruins over the last decade or so. And like you said, Pittsburgh and Washington are always teams that have, kind of been in the way in their division, the class of the old Atlantic. So the Islanders, even coming off that Eastern Conference final, even though they've beaten the Penguins and the Caps the last times that they faced them in the last 2 years in the playoffs and pretty decisively too, I think the Islanders are still the team that has the most to prove of the four teams that are probably going to get there. It's, they're missing a big piece in Anders Lee. They made their moves at the deadline to try to replace him. But, and maybe the only place you really trust the Islanders the most over those other teams is on D and in goal. But they don't have the same level of skill. And I think that's ultimately what bit them in the playoffs last year. And can they get to that level that the guys on the Bruins can and Crosby can and Ovechkin can? That's the biggest question for them.
Where's Matthew Barzal in all this?
A super talented guy who has yet to really break out. You know, he's had some incredible moments. I think if you have any social media account, you've seen a couple of his goals this year that were incredible. He's probably got two or three of the top 10 goals in the league. And so he's had real flashes of it, but losing Lee really hurt him. He needs a big bull of a guy on his wing to really clear some space for him and be a dependable guy to receive passes or just kind of clean up anything in front of the net. He's been more aggressive this year in terms of shooting the puck, but, he still has those lapses, those games or stretches where he just disappears. And that's when the Islanders offense disappears. I think they've gotten zero or one goals in maybe six of their last 10 games. And it's kind of as he goes, so goes their offense. And sometimes that contributes to him maybe missing some details at the other end, which lowers his ice time and in the Barry Trotz system. So he had a great playoff last year, but he wasn't really the star. And whether he can really grab this particular team by the horns and be that guy, because it's such a team first concept, I don't know if he can do it right now, but now would be a good time because they need a little bit of a boost.
Adrian mentioned playoff experience earlier. It's a word we're all very familiar with. We use it all the time, and I think we probably overuse it, and probably in no sport more than hockey. Yeah, you have to have been there. You have to have experienced it in order to achieve that, whatever. Is that real, or is this just one of the crutches that we in the media use here? Arthur, you're smiling, so I'll give it to you first.
Well, I cover a general manager who values it maybe more than anybody else who runs a team. Lou Lamoriello, it's usually the first thing that he points to when it's terms of an acquisition or adding a piece or subtracting a piece. He looks for that chemistry and experience. And he the trade that he made with the Devils to get Kyle Palmieri and Travis Zajac. Palmieri maybe doesn't have that extensive playoff experience, but Zajac certainly does, even though it was a while ago. And then Braden Coburn is coming off winning a cup. I don't know that he's going to play a big role in this team going forward, but he wants guys that have been there and they were a team that they inherited that hadn't really been there very much. And they turned into a team that now has some experience. And that's a lot to do with Barry Trotz and how he's kind of remade this team without many huge changes other than obviously losing John Tavares when they came in, but they care about it here, and it can seem a little ridiculous because you don't know even you don't know. Travis Zajac hasn't been in the playoffs in 5 years. So, and he's the first time with a new team. So you can never really predict this kind of stuff and whether it'll matter. But yeah, there certainly are a lot of general managers and coaches who value it. And we'll see when the playoffs come, whether it really will matter or whether it's, you know, skill and all the other stuff that seems to matter just as much.
Well, the one thing I would say, and I'll throw this at you, Adrian, is if experience matters, the experience that I would want a player to have is that they've won. I think experience of losing can be as much of an inhibitor as it is an advantage. And I think the Colorado Avalanche may well be a team that could point to that. Your thoughts?
Yeah. The Avalanche are full of a lot of guys have been here a while, you know. Gabe Landeskog has been here 7-8 years. People forget Nathan MacKinnon has been here 7-8 years. He's only 25, but and they've never won anything beyond the second round. Now, you know, I do think that it's nice to have a guy on your team who's won a cup and can be in the room and shine the ring and say, hey, boys, this is what it was like. You know, that's nice, but they've got to be a good player, first of all, and still be able to play. It doesn't matter if you won a cup 5 years ago if you can't play anymore. So that's number one. I think if some teams fall in love a little too much with that. Well, you know, he's won in the past, you know, so that must make him, you know, really valuable on our team. Well, then they go out and they don't do anything in the playoffs. I mean, the Avalanche have acquired guys at the deadline over the years that quote unquote won, and then you never heard from them in the playoffs, and they you know, they did zero. I think it's more important to just have maybe a nucleus that's more experienced together and they know each other more. And I do think that's one thing that the Avalanche have going for them is I do think their core guys have kept learning as they've gone along. They did take a step, you know, the last couple of years by winning in the first round, something they hadn't done in a long time before that. And I think they were really hit with bad luck with injuries last year. Otherwise, I think they would have beaten Dallas and gone to the Western Finals. The fact is, you know, there's been a lot of teams that supposedly had everything all in place and all the experience and the guys at the deadline that helped who were going to win. Like San Jose Sharks are one I remember always. And then they still have not won a cup. It's all so many, you guys know, there's so many factors come into play. Luck, timing, just all kinds of things to win a cup. And one thing goes wrong, you're not going to win it. Experience matters, but the right kind of experience, and more than anything, a guy who can actually play still.
You know, Adrian, we asked Arthur about Matt Barzal. You know, the problem in Canada, and Barzal's Canadian, we don't get to see him very much. We haven't been able to enjoy Nathan MacKinnon this year. How would you gauge this season compared to the last few for Nate?
Real good. Probably not as dynamic as it was the last couple. I mean, he almost had 100 points those last 2 years. You know, I think 99 was the one 2 years ago, 97. Still a point of game guy, though. Very, very dangerous and skilled. He probably has not had as much on the power play as he has in other years. I think that's cost him a few easy points that he usually would get. But and he did start off slow scoring wise. I think he only had 2 goals and then like 20 assists for the start of the year. Now it's looking a little more balanced. He's a great player. I mean, look, he's and I say great meaning great, great talent. Still got to prove that he can win, and it's on his mind constantly. And believe me, he's very uptight about it in a way that, you know, he's got so much inner pressure on him to win this thing and be part of the club that he really wants to be in, which is his big buddy, Sidney Crosby. I think he sits and sweats at night thinking, you know, boy, if I ever have to go back to Nova Scotia in the summers with Sid and Brad Marchand and all this group there, and I'm the one guy that doesn't have the cup ring, boy, that would eat at him for life. So, I mean, it's really a lot of pressure on him to win. And, you know, it's you don't want to be around him when he's lost the game. Trust me, he showed that the other day with a couple one-word answers after they lost the Blues. Great player, though, and, you know, only 25, so many, you know, good years ahead. But, yeah, excellent year, though. He'd be an all-star this year, I think, still, if there was a game.
So we nobody needs to be advised. We are playing in a COVID environment. Things are not the same as they usually are. We are playing a shortened regular season. Does it make it more difficult? That fact make it more difficult to assess favorites for the Stanley Cup? Arthur, to you first.
Yeah, you know, I'm not so sure. I think just the condensed time, you know, maybe with injuries, they might play a little bit more of a factor. You know, the fact that we don't even know exactly when the playoffs are going to start, especially up your way, it kind of adds a little bit of mystery to it. But I think 56 games, and especially because you're going to see the first, you got to fight through the teams that you've been fighting against for the entire season that you've seen eight times or so. It's going to be the teams that get out of each division are going to be the teams that earned it because it's been a dogfight all year long. You know, I think obviously the experience in the East division where everybody's been beaten up on the Sabres and the Devils all year, maybe the intensity will get to ratchet up a little bit because you're not dropped in to play a couple against, you know, like the Islanders are finishing a three-game set with the Caps. They kind of, played a terrible game the other night against Washington when they didn't have Ovechkin, but the two before that were both 1-0 games. I think nobody's really going to commit to kind of going all out just yet, especially in a division like this one where you know pretty much who the four teams are going to be. There's no secrets, there's no tricks to show anybody anymore. It's going to be war in the first two rounds, you know, whether it's Colorado St. Louis or Colorado Vegas or Islanders Washington, Islanders Pittsburgh. These are going to be real battles. So I think whoever comes out of that is either going to be bloodied and beaten and maybe not ready for the Final Four or as battle tested as any team's ever been.
Well, I agree with you 100%. I was just going to make that same point. I think the first two rounds this year are going to be more interesting and more intense.
They always are, though. They always are. The first two rounds are always the best, Bob.
Well, that's what hockey pucks say.
You're talking to three of them. So you're talking to three of them. So.
Well, then you're all a bunch of idiots. I would say that this year becomes much more intriguing because the entire focus of the year has been on these eight, or in the case of Canada, seven team confrontations, essentially rivalries, more games played against these teams than any other year. Greater knowledge, these series, as Arthur said, you know, the Islanders and Washington playing each other a bunch of times in a row, and that's happened out in the West too, and here in Canada. I think all of this leads to really intense first and second round, and I wonder whether the semifinal and the final will be able to have an equal amount of intensity. General thoughts on that. Adrian, to you.
You know, I think that, I agree with John a little bit. I think the first round's always been the best to me.
Sure.
They're always the ones with the most upsets. Look at 2 years ago, all four bottom teams beat all four top teams in the playoffs. And the Avalanche are one of them. They knocked off Calgary by 8-1. I've always found that unless you're talking back in the Avalanche Red Wing days, when they met in the conference finals a lot, I've always been most bored by the conference finals, to be honest with you. I like the first round and I like the cup finals best. I've always found those to be the best series to watch. The second, third round, you're kind of a little more, maybe a little fatigue setting in watching hockey every single night. Conference finals, you're down to only four teams. And it feels like, they've sort of been thrown together and haven't seen them much. You're right. I think rambling a little bit here, to my point, my opinion is that it's going to be intense no matter what. It always is in the NHL playoffs. I'm wondering, though, if they're going to be as intense in a sense, though, in the first round, because they've seen so each other so much all year long, whether there's a boredom factor that's going to set in a little bit already. We've seen these teams play all season long. So, yeah, the games are bigger now, but are they going to be more intense in a way? Yeah, they're going to be more intense, but are they going to be more interesting in a way? I don't know. I mean, they've played each other all year long. I think the players are sick and tired of playing against these same teams all year long.
You don't think familiarity breeds contempt?
Oh, I think it does. But I think so much familiarity also breeds boredom, too. And there's maybe been too much of that.
It's interesting because I understand what you're saying, Adrian. But I'll tell you what, if it's Colorado versus Minnesota or Vegas versus Minnesota in the first round, the moment the Wild take a lead, the emotion will explode.
Well, that's true.
Because these guys. That's funny. I was talking to a manager this morning because I told him, he said, you know, I needed a break from hockey. I'd watched so much hockey. I made a decision not to watch. I can only imagine what the players have gone through with this every second day and the travel and the hibernation on the road. This has got to be as tough a season on any athlete in the NHL I've ever seen. So the moment, if you are the favorite, the moment you start to lose, it's going to get crazy. The emotion is going to come out. And so listen, all four divisions, the 16 teams that are going to make the playoffs are actually pretty close. So I think the first and second round, I agree with Bob. I think it's going to be spectacular and vicious, but I always think the first and second round are spectacular and vicious. So that's kind of my point.
When the game was more physical than it is now, and it's barely physical at all now. I'm not arguing that point. I like the quality of the play, but there has always been this sense again among hockey people, Arthur, that, when the playoffs come, the style of game changes, the intensity changes, everything changes. It becomes tougher. It becomes tougher to move. There's less space. There's more physicality. There's more anger. There's all these things. But are we going to see it this year, given that these teams essentially have played a game every other night for the last 4 or 5 months?
They're going to try. You know, I think if you, like you were saying, John, you get tired of, or Adrian, you know, yeah, it can be a little bit boring. Some of these 1-0, 2-1 games, teams that are playing for
you've been around the Islanders too long, 2-1 games.
Well, the Islanders drag everybody down to their level eventually. So, but I think the intensity factor and the physical factor and the cheapness fat, you know, like that stuff is going to go through the roof. You haven't seen, you know, I haven't seen Brad Marchand do anything crazy yet. He's probably saving it for a month from now.
Yeah.
Sid Crosby hasn't kind of ratcheted up his sneaky, dirty physical stuff. There's guys that are just waiting. You know, it's funny to me in the microcosm of the Islanders, when I think about the matchups and trying to plan who's important, who's going to, you know, Leo Komarov, God love him, is maybe the least physically gifted NHL player who's playing right now. And he's as important to the Islanders as Matthew Barzal will be against any of these teams, because Leo brings that kind of nasty, unpredictable edge. And you're going to need at least a couple of guys in every series to bring that, because otherwise there's nothing that changes. The skill guys will ramp up their intensity. The goalies will be sharper, you'll get it in, get it out, all the usual stuff will be more magnified, but you got to have some unpredictability in these series, because we've 8-9 games against each other. You just don't have anything left in the bag.
And you got to have a ton of depth. And Arthur, you touched on Braden Coburn, and I'm sure if Lou and Barry had their way, Braden Coburn would not play a game, but you know darn well that you need 8, 9, maybe 10 defensemen to get through the Stanley Cup playoffs. And you might need them earlier than ever before, because I think of the physical nature. And so that depth, you know, I mean, Adrian, who's deeper, Vegas or Colorado? Minnesota or Colorado? I mean, depth becomes a huge factor in all of this at this time of year.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you can only point, you just point to the Avalanche as far as lack of depth at key moments that have killed the team the last 3 years. The two of the last 3 years, they've had to finish up the playoffs with no-name goalies who barely played all year for the team. 3 years ago, it was Andrew Hammond playing the final two games against Nashville. Last year, it was Michael Hutchinson finishing up the playoffs. He won a couple games, almost brought him back from, but, you know, he was pretty bad in most of the games, let's face it. And he lost 5-4 in game seven. So they had no depth of goaltending with these injuries. I remember 3 years ago, they had to play Duncan Siemens and David Warsawski as a 3-4 D-men against Nashville because of injuries. Eric Johnson, Sam Girard went down. You absolutely need the depth. I think the Avalanche have more depth than any team right now. The problem is they still get crushed by injuries at the wrong time. And it's always the best players that go down at the worst times too. I mean, even whether it's COVID or regular injuries, they always got a guy out. I mean, ever since I've covered this team, really the only year they didn't have a ton of injuries was that first year they won the cup with Forsberg, Sakic, Lemieux, et cetera. But I mean, every other year there's something. I mean, remember Peter Forsberg missed the final two rounds of Stanley 2001 playoffs. Mm-hmm. They still won. But that's why they had a lot of depth. They went out and got Steve Reinprecht from the LA Kings as a supposed throw-in in a trade for Rob Blake. Well, he turned out to be one of the most valuable guys in the playoffs for that team. They would not have won a Stanley Cup that year without Steve Reinprecht. So further to your point, these guys that you don't know, don't notice sometimes in the regular season, boy, when the playoffs come, that those depth guys matter as much as the top guys, really, when you really analyze it.
We got to take a quick break. We'll come back with more. Arthur Staples with us, Adrian Dater, back after these messages. Yours truly, Bob McCowan, along with John Shannon. Arthur Staple from The Athletic joins us from the East Coast. Adrian Dater of the Colorado Hockey News is in Las Vegas. You guys are talking about, about fourth line and depth and the values of it. I see it during the regular season, but am I wrong? I mean, your bench shortens when you get into the playoffs almost by almost inevitably. John shaking his head.
No, I don't think that happens anymore, Bob. I think the game is constructed now. You know, we have these damn 2-minute commercial breaks. Players can get rested.
Well, that's a better reason why you play your best lines over and over again.
But every team, every line can skate. I think that the days of we're going to play two lines and you know, season a couple of other guys in, I think those are gone. I really do. I think when that's why when teams go 11-7, 11 forward, 7D, everybody raises their eyebrows saying, holy smokes, we're doing something really weird here. I think 12 forwards, everybody plays.
The team that I cover is the masters of the four line rotation. You know, they have the best fourth line in hockey in Matt Martin, Casey Cikas, Cal Clutterbuck. They sometimes get more 5-on-5 time than any other line except the other one that's going well. So, and it's the only line that never changes. So the Islanders for a long time, even predating Barry Trotz, have been built on, we need all four of our lines going. And when the playoffs come, we need those guys even more because they're supposed to be playoff style guys. And especially I think from what we were talking about the war of attrition that's going to come in the first two rounds, you got to have all 12 guys. You're probably going to need 13 or 14 forwards. You're going to need people to cycle in because guys are going to get more banged up than they were during the regular season. You're going to need guys to bang bodies more, and that's where you get from your fourth line. So yeah, I feel like now it's not just the Islanders. It's going to be everybody that's going to need regular bodies and reinforcements.
So in this year of condensed play over a period of time, we have seen, generally speaking, rotations of goaltenders remain about where you would have expected them in an 82-game schedule. Does anybody disagree with that? I don't think there's been a real fundamental rethinking of how you use goaltenders. But does that change in the playoffs? Does it become more urgent, especially for teams maybe like Colorado, who have some insecurity about their goaltending?
If you'd asked me that 2 weeks ago, I would have said absolutely yes. They had no backup goalie. No offense to Jonas Johansson or Hunter Mieska manned the position this year, but no, they didn't have one. They've got Devin Dubnyk now. To me, though, Bob, I think that if I'm a coach, if I'm a team, I say, look, we're not doing the rotation here much in the playoffs. You're the number one guy for a reason. It's time to lay it all on the line. If you can't handle, a game every other day in the playoffs, then pack up and go home. And, you're not a big leaguer. And, I think that this is the time where goalies, they say all year long, well, I got to save myself for the playoffs. I got to get my rest during the season. Then the playoffs come. Well, so you shouldn't need rest in the playoffs either then. To me, maybe sound old, a little curmudgeon here, but play the game, play it every other night. You don't have to be 1,000% every single night. Guys play hurt, goalies too. If you have an off night, so what? You're allowed to lose three games in a series. I don't like to play. I don't want to do any rotating thing unless they're just so equal in talent that it really isn't a drop off much. But even then, I think players like to know. I think players like it when they have a number one who's going to play every night. And I bet they still like it even more in the playoffs because, they get used to habits and patterns. When you got a different guy, they have to sometimes change their patterns, and they don't like that. Hockey players don't like change in the playoffs.
Arthur, what's the odds of Varlamov and the other Russian alternating in the playoffs?
As you guys were talking, I was trying to think, since we don't know what the schedule is going to look like, are we going to see some back-to-backs because it's within divisions? I mean, geographically speaking, for the East Division, it's certainly possible. And I think that's kind of a wrinkle that you have to wait and see. Ilya Sorokin's been really good. He was terrible the other night against Washington, but overall he's been as advertised, when, coming in his first year from the KHL. But I think Varlamov's their guy. And I think in terms of matchups, Varlamov has kind of gotten the bulk of the starts against the other three presumptive playoff teams in the East. So I think you're setting yourself up to start with this guy, but at least you have someone backing up who can kind of, jump in at a moment's notice. And that's really what you want. And I think when we get to look at the schedule at some point for the playoffs, if they're going to be back-to-backs, I think that's the part where you start to say, it's pretty anathema now to play a goalie back-to-back at any time. So will you do it in the playoffs? Will you do it when you have a travel day? You lost a travel day in between, whether it's between, New York and DC or New York and Pittsburgh, that stuff, I think, is still, everybody's got a lot of options on their board right now in terms of the coaches.
Yeah, the interesting thing is that the one division we haven't really talked about is the division that has three really good teams, Carolina, Florida, and Tampa. We know Andrei Vasilevsky is going to start every practice and every game and every post-game meal for the Tampa Bay Lightning. He's going to be there. I Chris Drieger's done a good job in Florida. And how quick will Joel pull the plug on Bobrovsky? And then you got Carolina, and I know Mrazek's on and off hurt all the time, and Nedeljkovic's done a good job, and James Reimer's done a good job. They're the outlier to me. You by the time we get to the playoffs, we might see all three goalies for Carolina. It wouldn't surprise me.
Can I jump in on this goalie thing though again? I feel like goalies are just getting a little too babied and pampered in this game now. Why is it that the forwards can play back-to-back games, skate 20 to 25 minutes a night and be just fine to be able to do that, but a goalie just has to stand there half the game and not do anything? Can't play a back-to-back. They got to sprawl around on their knees, and that's tough on the knees, but, just give me a break with this back-to-back thing. Patrick Waugh played games every single night in the playoffs and came out of emergency rooms and played, I just feel like this, this, well, we can't tax our goalie thing too much. Is I think goalies want more work. If you really talk to most goalies, they want the reps. They thrive on that. They don't like to sit around and sit out of games too much.
Go ahead, Bob.
Where have you heard that argument, Shannon?
Every day.
Glenn Hall played 500 games in a row, threw up before 495 of them, and I don't know why he didn't throw up in the other five. And, you know, and now, you know, as Adrian said, we baby these guys, and I don't know for any reason. Look, we're tight on time. Let me conclude it with this. Who's the best goaltender in hockey? And I ask that because in most years, we can form a pretty solid consensus of who is viewed as the number one goaltender in the game. I'm not sure we can do that.
Yeah, we can.
You think we can?
Yes, sir.
Okay, who it is? Who is it?
Andrei Vasilevsky in Tampa. He's a 6'6" Gumby. He's a tremendous athlete. And for the last little while, he's durable. And it's amazing. He's on the Stanley Cup champion.
Arthur, you were tilting your head when Shannon jumped in and said, yes, we can. You're not so sure.
I'm not so sure. I think of it more in terms of who's got the best tandem. You know, the Islanders have a pretty good tandem. Vegas has probably, if you're going to pick a tandem, if you're going to pick a trio, it's probably Carolina. For my money, the guy that's done the most with the least is UC Saros in Nashville. Mm. Maybe he's not a star yet, but he's pretty much the main reason why that team is back in the playoff chase. And I, you know, that division, I, like you said, we haven't talked about it much, but it's going to be pretty goalie heavy, I think, in the playoffs, even though there's a lot of skilled guys there. And that, you know, I know everybody in Canada is on the Jack Campbell train, and I don't want to,
only Leaf fans. Come on, Arthur. Oh, no. Only Leaf fans.
We just assume you're all Leaf fans. Sorry. We're just painting with a broad brush down here. I'm a big Saros fan. I know he's a smaller guy, and obviously Vasilevsky's definitely up there. And I think for this year, even though he slipped a little bit lately, Marc-Andre Fleury has really been put a nice capper on a hell of a career.
About 30 seconds, real quick, Adrian, you're chime in.
Boy, you know, I got to say Vasilevsky's probably the best individual goalie right now. I'll have to begrudgingly agree with John on that. I like Saros too. Boy, I'm a big Fleury guy, though.
I'll give Fleury a nod, too. I mean, I don't know if he's the best, but I'd feel pretty comfortable having him in goal going into the playoffs.
I love Fleury. I don't want to. That's why I think Vegas is going to be the favorite to beat Colorado if they meet Marc-Andre Fleury.
You might be right. We got to get out of here, guys. Time is our enemy. Good of you to join us. Stay safe and enjoy the rest of the regular season, and hopefully we'll have a chance to chat down the road sometime. Thank you, Arthur. Anytime. Thanks, Adrian.
Thanks, guys.
All the best. We'll come back and wrap this one up in a moment after these messages.
This week on The Sign-Off, Brian Aaronworth tells the story of how he unknowingly outbid Wayne Gretzky in the fight to represent Sidney Crosby.
There was a fellow in that meeting. His name was Pat Brisson. He says, Brian, I have a hockey player that I'd like you to consider. And he said the name, Sidney Crosby. I remember leaving the meeting thinking, I better do some homework on this Sidney Crosby player. And Pat said that there were other people looking to get Sidney under their umbrella.
Okay.
It's the same year, 2003. I'm having breakfast with Mike. All of a sudden, Mike gets a tap on the shoulder, and I look up, and it's Wayne. You guys mind if I have breakfast with you?
Yeah, sorry, this seat's taken, sir. How dare you?
At the breakfast table, Sidney's name came up. Wayne said something like, oh yeah, did we get that deal, Mike?
Oh my God.
So it turns out that the people that we were bidding against
were your partners,
WG Authentic and Wayne Gretzky. Because I didn't know that at the time.
The Sign-Off is available on iTunes, Spotify, YouTube, and wherever you get your podcasts.
So again, our thanks to Arthur Staple, Adrian Dater for joining us. Was there a question I asked them that I didn't ask you, Shannon, that you had a strong opinion on? Because I know you have opinions on everything.
How was your day?
I didn't ask them that.
No, that was about it, though. No,
simply because I didn't care, and I really don't care that much about you.
Yeah, you're just mad that Adrian's in Vegas and you're not.
I'm not happy about it.
I can tell. So the interesting thing is both guys were I think it speaks to how people have watched the NHL this year. You know, Arthur works in that Eastern Division. He's very familiar with that, and he doesn't get a chance to see anybody else anymore. You don't get a trip to Florida to watch the Panthers and the Lightning. Adrian doesn't get a chance to come to Pittsburgh or go to Boston. So we've lived in these bubbles, the word of the month, but we've played in these, the NHL's played in these bubbles. And so you don't really get a sense of what the other divisions are like. It's really difficult.
Well, and I mean, I've been trying to point to this in the many occasions we've talked about hockey, is the complete inability to predict what's going to happen in Stanley Cup playoffs. Mm. Because who makes predictions? It's people like us. And I know you sit there with your multiple monitors and watch games every night, but most of the guys that are doing this kind of stuff used to travel, used to see teams, used to talk to more people, more interpersonal stuff. And what's the basis for making a decision on who's the best team going into the Stanley Cup playoffs? I don't know how you do it. And you can't even point to a single game during the regular season and say, when this team played this team, here's what happened.
Right.
And that's going to be problematic when they get to the playoffs.
Yeah. I think your point about how physical and emotional the first two rounds are going to be really speaks to where the game is right now. And it's a classic case of survival of the fittest for the third round.
Do you think it will be noticeably more physical?
Because
of the rivalry thing, because they played each other so many times?
Yes, I do. I think you got a sense of that in the Toronto-Winnipeg series, Bob, the Maple Leafs ratcheted up a bit and Winnipeg didn't start pushing back enough.
Yeah, and we're not in the playoffs yet. That's another degree altogether. We got to get out of here. We'll be back tomorrow. We thank you for listening or watching, as the case may be, for John Shannon, Bob McCowan. Have a good one. Stay safe. We'll see you tomorrow.